Welcome to Neighborhood Church. To find out more about who we are and to support the work that we're doing, go to neighborhood.love. Have a good and beautiful day, friends.
So we are continuing our series on mantras. And mantras are phrases. It could be like a sentence. It could be a lyric to a song. Did anyone hear Taylor Swift's new song for Toy Story 5? I didn't know she even released a new song. Okay, I'm really excited. I love Taylor Swift. Is it what? I don't get memos. No, I'm not. I have three teenagers, and they don't tell me anything, apparently. So they're not. Yeah. So I just, on the way to church, I heard it. I cried, and that's enough, all right? Yeah. Do you think they just surprise you? I am a high feeler who loves to cry. Why am I telling this? Mantras, right? So mantras don't have to just be a sound. They don't have to just be like a couple words. They could be a paragraph. They could be a memory. It could be a video you play in your head. It could be a funny line that you had from when you're in college. It can be whatever that grounds you, whatever pauses you and makes you think of not only where you came from, but also of who you're becoming, right? Like a mantra that I shared a couple weeks ago came from Drag Queen off of RuPaul's Drag Queen show, and it said, "We don't do that anymore." And I love that, because when I think about something, if I'm processing something and like a memory or something I used to do pops up, I can, like, instead of meeting myself with shame, like, "Oh, you can't do that, you can't think about it," it's like, "Oh, we don't do that anymore," and it stops me. Instead of going back to that old version of me, I can look at it with kindness and say, "Oh, I did used to do that. Hey, that got me through some hard times and led to some other things, but I don't do that anymore." What? And it moves me to who I'm becoming, right? We talked last week about good and beautiful, and good and beautiful being this mantra that we use to help plant, that to plant this church. And it's when people think about God, they rarely think about something good or beautiful. They usually think about violence in the Bible. They usually think about shame, fear, angry is the dominant view of what God is. And what I see in the person of Jesus, as Paul Tillich says, we have a Jesus-looking God, is that I see a God full of wonder and beauty and compassion and love and self-sacrifice and this movement in the world of inclusion and believability to the least and the last. And so when I think about God, I want to think about a benevolent universe that God created. I want to think about something truly good and beautiful of God, of myself and those around me and all of creation. And it's helpful when I move into those old patterns of feeling judgment. Like, I had a conversation with someone after our very first mantra series, and they were sharing how there was this horrible thing that happened in the world, and they instantly thought, "What sin did I commit to make that happen?" It's where they started. They're like, "I worked through it," but it's helpful to hear that I still go back to these patterns of saying, if something bad in my life or around me happened, I am to blame. Why? Because God is out to punish me, because God is a just God. Things they heard when they were younger. Instead of moving into this place of, there is a good God who wants nothing but good things for us. And I deeply, deeply believe that. So mantras, then, are not a magic trick. Mantras are not like if you right, if you hit the button 1,000 times, then you finally get the good stuff. Right? It's not like this, you have to meet a quota. A mantra is a touch point. It is something that you can say or hit or remind or experience that just slowly just moves you back to where you want to be so you can continue to be who you want to become. And mantras are incredibly important to me. Do you guys remember some of the 2 weeks ago we had people share their mantras? And we had one gentleman share, he was sitting right there, your friend, and he said his mantra was, what? No, it was not that at all. It was, "Cats don't bark." Cats don't bark. It's bark. Oh, Mike. Oh, I love you so much, my man. I do. You and I are one and the same, man, all right? Close. It was, "Cats don't bark," right? And Nikki and I have been talking about that for the last couple weeks, of the whole idea of you can only be who you are. And you feel pressure. You feel pressure at times to be something you're not. And in order to be good or loved or valued or accepted or included, I have to be this instead of just being exactly who you are. And it's really brought me, it's brought me a lot of grounding of like, I'm just going to be who I am. And I'm always becoming into myself. I'm always coming, becoming into who I believe God's inviting all of us to be, including myself. I want my energy towards that. And so today we are talking on the Psalm 46, where it says, be still and know that I am God, right? And I love this. I chose this as the next one because it means a lot to me. Because I think of like 20 to 32-year-old Chris loved this mantra, right? And it comes out of Psalm 46, which we're going to read a little bit. But when I think about former versions of me and that verse of be still, know that I'm God, so much of 20-year-old Chris, and some of you knew 20-year-old Chris, right? It was so egocentric. It was like, be still. Oh, we're so strong. Be still and know that I am God. And it was like this idea of like, we just need to be rock solid in our faith. And we need to just be like assured in our faith. And the idea of like to be still meant like to be strong and to like wait until God delivers a message or a word where we're going to do whatever I thought God was doing or communicating or inviting. Was always something, what's the right word? Like majestic. Like it felt like all these mountaintop experiences we see in the Bible or in my life, it was like we have to get to those things. But it was funny, all those like big things I thought God was, like I had to be still and wait for God, were all like explosive growth in a church or to have this big word or this big healing. All these things that like could be really good, right? I don't think there's anything wrong about those things. But what I was hoping by being still and to know God would somehow come back to benefit me or the church that I was participating at. And what I saw other people celebrating were all those things. So it was like, I do believe God speaks to us. I'm in a wildly different place now than I was 20 years ago. But I still believe God invites us. And I think this mantra of being still and knowing God can lead us to some incredibly good and beautiful places. But it's just so radically different than to know God so that we can get and become something commercially successful, something we could brag about. It feels very uncomfortable even thinking about it. And it got me thinking of like Psalm 46. All psalms are meant to be sung. They were like a way of someone listening to someone sing, or you can sing. There's parts in there of where there's like mantras or chants, things you can say back that you're meant as a community to sing. And when I was in camp, when I was a camp counselor, there was one guy who made a point every day to sing a psalm, and we would just say a number, and then he'd sing it. And none of them were good, all right? None of them, he just made it up on the spot. But he was trying. It's like psalms are meant to be sung because, like, when you sing a hymn, like, we don't do a lot of hymns here, that's a way to teach you theology. It's a way to teach you about what we might think about God. And if you can have, like, a song that gets stuck in your head, you can be reminded of maybe some value or some biblical truth. There's a guy named John Wimber who helped grow the, Vineyard. He started the Vineyard movement. And he wanted songs that were very easy to sing and very easy to memorize. You wouldn't need a book in order to follow along. If you heard it once through, you could sing a song. A lot of their songs were wildly popular because they were so easy to sing. A lot of them had to do with thirst and hunger. If you go back, they were doing it like around like 5 p.m. because they're always thirsty and always hungry. But it was a way that you could like think, you could remember, you could recall. And Psalm 46 is no different. It is meant for us to remind ourselves in a simple way to be still and to know. But what we might think about that is very different than why they wrote it. So here's Psalm 46. Psalm 46 says this. God is our refuge and strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth gave way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging. There's a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her, and she will not fall. God will help her at the break of day. Nations are in uproar, kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice, the earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. I love this. Because in the Psalms, and even in the Bible, whenever they talk about, like, there's mountains that fall into the sea. If you ever read Revelations, which I don't always recommend people to read, all right? But still, if you have, there's a lot of language of things being torn down. In Psalms, it happens a lot of things that were established or strong. God has a way of bringing things down to its core, to its knees. This is meant to evoke chaos. What this psalmist is saying is that in this world, there's trouble, there's chaos, there's pain. What you thought was this order of how we think the world should be, the psalmist is saying it's all crumbling down to make a point. Because it says, as all these things are happening, there is this river through the city of God. Do you guys know what the city of God is? Starts with a J, ends with an M. Jerusalem, right? A little geographical information. There is no river that's flowing through Jerusalem, right? So this is what we call a metaphor, and the Bible's full of them. This is why I love the Bible, and why when people say Bible says it, I believe it. I'm like, that. I'm happy for you. There is no river like that through Jerusalem. So what are they saying? They're saying that where, and it says that this river, this spirit, brings peace and belonging in a world full of chaos. But the way they find peace is through strength. It says, did you see what God did? God brought desolation to the enemies. God will, you can burn up the shields, you can burn up, let the bows go, the swords, whatever it be, because we have God on our side. And they really believe this. This river, this spirit, this temple where God rests, this is not just to them, to the Hebrew people, it wasn't just this symbol. They really believed where heaven and earth met, of where the supernatural and the blood, guts, teeth, hair, and sweat on our backs, like where those coexist, was in this temple. And for them, this meant not just good vibes. It meant, who could be against us if God is for us? What do we have to fear? You could say, be still and know that I am God. But what does that word mean? Because it's a banger. It's a banger of a mantra. Just be like, I need to slow down, and I just need to know that there's God. And that could bring some solace. But what the Hebrew word means here is, it doesn't mean to, like, 25-year-old Chris to be like, we have to be still and just wait for God. It's not about assurance. It's not about certainty. It's about letting go. The word here, the Hebrew word no, means of a grip you would have on your weapon just to loosen it, to loosen your grip. Which means, well, one way of thinking about this is that whatever you thought that weapon was going to give you, which might be control, might be riches, it might be importance, it might make you feel like really alive, right? It might make you feel like you're some big person. It might make you feel like, I know what's going to happen. No one can hurt me because I'll hurt you before you hurt me, which is exactly what Jesus said, right? It's not. That was a joke. So this idea of to be still means to loosen your grip. And if there's a couple things I learned from some places I used to come from, and I'll never forget, it was like this profound moment when this person taught me this idea of, when we think about God, we like to think of control, that we know things. And once we know things, we hold on to them. And we think we know what brings us value. We think we know what brings us worth. We know what brings us importance, what brings us security, what brings me beauty, what brings me, in order to be included with this group of friends, or to be feel justified to be important at work, or to feel like my kids can respect me, or whatever it might be. We have these things we have this kung fu grip on. And we think, as long as I have this, I'm okay in this world. And in Psalm 46, it's this weapon. We will defend our land. We will defend our God. We will defend our family, and we will kill. We will do whatever we need in order to be okay. And the psalm is saying, it's time to, like, loosen up. And when this pastor taught this, I was like, sitting in the front row, because that's where we had to be. And he went from, like, you have this kung fu grip on what you think is important. But when you do that, you're missing out on what the universe of what God, what you might be doing. Because you're not open to new ways of thinking or belonging. You're not open to transformation when you live a life like this. And to be still and know that I'm God, this mantra of saying be still, is a way for me to say I can live in this open space. I can live in an open hand. Now this is vulnerable. This is a lack of control. This means I am open to new ways of love and belonging, sure, but also means I'm open to new forms of pain and loss and fear. And in this, I might even have to be open to what already was lost. That's grief. That's death work. This is a much more risky, vulnerable place than this. But we all have this illusion of control, right? Now, there's some things we should be in control of. We should be in control of us. We can control what we say. We can be in control of and be aware of what we bring into a room. We should be in control of how we're treating our body and our kindness and our words and how we treat those around us. But then we get this idea of that we should be in control of other people because it makes us feel better. Right? We were talking, like, you have some teenagers in your life. It feels really good when you think you are in control of your teenagers, right? It's like the illusion of, oh, I really know what's best for you. It's like, no, you don't, right? I have some ideas that are informed by, like, Ninja Turtles shows I watched when I was a kid, right? I'm informed by, like, Reality Bites, right? I'm informed by some John Bon Jovi, right? Am I saying that right? I was going to say John Bovey. I'm like, that doesn't sound right. All right, no one likes him anyway. So I'm informed by some Wilco songs of how to find happiness, right? You just smile all the time, is what Jeff Tweedy says. And we have this idea of, I know what's best, and I can be in control. I know what's best for work. I know what's best for my neighbor's kids. I know what's best for my neighbor's dogs, right? I know what's best for this political party. I know what's best for this church. Whatever it might be, we have this idea of thinking, I know. And I believe I'm not the only one when you've had those discoveries that you really don't know that much. Like, even this morning, some things happened over this weekend that were not detrimental. They were hard. And I had some feelings about it. And as I was coming to church thinking about this message, I'm like, I'm so glad I'm just open-handed in everything in my life. I'm so glad that I am just up on this elite level of consciousness, right? And what I thought about was that situation and how I wanted to have control over something I could never have control over. And I realized, I'm like, oh, if I really live like this in that situation, then all I'm trying to do is punish those people. All I'm trying to do is protect myself from future harm of those people. Which means then it also does not open me up to new expressions with those people. It means then I'm saying you can only connect with me, you can only be in this space if you match exactly where I'm at, which is, that's not the kind of person I want to be. I don't want to live there. And it had, like, just this aha moment of when I have this illusion of control, I'm missing out on maybe what love is inviting me to participate in. And I had a little chuckle to myself of, like, oh, yeah, I also have to follow what I believe the Bible is inviting me to, be in this open-handed space. That's right. That's exactly what those kids should be doing downstairs. They're probably pumping soap on the floor. Like, yeah, this is awesome. So being open-handed, right? So if we are to be still, and to be still means we have to remove the illusion of control and be open to new ways of thinking or belonging and what God might be inviting us to do. Until we do that, we can't know. Because if it's to be still and to know that she's God, how do you know things? This is a not a rhetorical question. Since there's only 500 of us here, right? And I got really close to the camera by accident, right? How do you, I'm genuinely interested. How do you come into knowledge of things? Do you read YouTube? Perfect, right? So what about what is it about YouTube that helps you learn things? So you have it helps you to see it, like the project being done. Okay, who else? You have to read it. You print. You print everything. Oh, I bet the ink salesman loves you, all right? And the paper, yeah. Okay, you need to read it. What is it about reading that helps you? So you're self-aware of what brings you information and how you retain it, okay? Who else? You got to do it. Man, we are a sorry group of people. Because I've said 100 times, if I'm ever going to write a memoir, it's going to be called Move It Twice. Because I have to experience it, and I'm like, oh, yeah, you can't drive 90 miles per hour. Okay, got it. Okay, so you got to experience it. Who else? Google? Mm-hmm. What is it about Googling that helps you? It'll give you about 10 different answers, and you can choose which one you like. Yeah. Okay. Failure, doing it. Yes. So once you experience the failure, learning from it, you learn what not to do. Yes. Okay. Jamie's that very similar to what you were saying, the experience? Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yes. And the successes. Exactly. As Richard Rohr says, transformation happens through deep love or deep pain. Right? And so when you do it well, you can learn. I often learn from the pain. And I'm very thankful for that being my teacher because it gets my attention. Right? Anyone else? Yeah. Reviews. Ooh, I'm so glad I asked this question. I would never have thought about that. Tell me more. What is it about reviews? That's really good. That's good. Okay. I am, Brandon, I don't know if you know this, but I am very cheap. So the amount of times I just look for the cheapest price and then I wouldn't get that item for like 3 months for Christmas has happened way too many times. And one time I never got the game that I ordered for my kid because it was a scam. But I would have saved $2, right? Would have saved $2. I know. So reviews. See, I'm learning as well, right? Anyone else? How do you come into knowledge that helps you? Really? The second Tuesday of the month is software updates. I did not know that. Be still and know that there's updates on the second Tuesday of every month, right? Loosen your grip. That's awesome. You see, I had some time to think about this with knowing it's my anniversary. And it's also Flag Day. And I think it's our president's birthday, too. And there's a UFC fight tonight, too. Yes, on the White House, yeah. So all positive things, no comment. And a thunderstorm. Apocalyptic. The mountains will crash into the sea as there's a fight on the White House lawn. Be still and know that I'm God. But I was thinking of, like, I am just so in love with my partner, with Nikki. I met her when I was 13, told her she had big teeth, became best friends, we fell in love. That's like the very quick version. But I've known this woman since I was 13 years old. And I'm crazy about her. And the way I come into knowledge of Nikki is just in proximity. I am curious. Like, when I was thinking through the different stages of like her life, my life, and our life. Because it's not just our life, right? She has life, and I have life, and we share those together. And we have different transformations. We have different, I wish I could tell you a lot about this. We don't have time, but like our deconstruction of faith stories and our reconstruction are just so, it's so wildly different, and it's perfect because how she got to a place and where I got to a place were so different, but they came to this really good and beautiful spot. So when I think about knowledge, I have to just be in proximity with Nikki, and I have to be curious. The times that I've gotten, I don't want to say in trouble, that's the wrong word. The times where I've missed the boat, where I've missed my wife, where we've had our seasons where we weren't connecting, is because I was expecting Nikki to stay at this place. I didn't even know it. Like when she was done being the pastor of this church, and she went, this is so funny, I wasn't planning on saying this, which is always a great way to start a story. But when Nikki had a separate job, we've only worked together. As long as I've been a pastor, she's been a pastor in the same space. And I loved being co-pastors with Nikki. But one of my very first concerns was like, we're not going to share a calendar anymore. And for some reason, like, I cried about that for hours. I'm like, what? We are never going to connect. How are we ever going to find time to be each other? Like, in my mind, I made it this huge obstacle because it's all I've ever known with Nikki was I could click on my calendar and say, oh, she's got a 4 o'clock. We can go for a happy hour, and then we can go see a movie. And I didn't have to have a conversation. It was like, oh, this is how we're going to do it. And when that changed, it felt so, it's laughable now, but it really felt scary. And I had to talk to her. My therapist helped too. But, like, what I had to do was just be in proximity and trust that it's going to be okay and talk through it. And there's been way harder things than a calendar change in our marriage. But the only way I've come into knowledge is I have to be around her, and I have to be curious, and I have to be open to new expressions. And as maybe some of you guys know, relationships are hard. And when you get locked in of all this, this is all it can ever be, we're always becoming. We're always growing. We never stop becoming something. And if you just get locked in on all this can be, then I would miss out on the person I love most in this world. That takes work. And what I'd say is the same thing with God. If it's printing out paper, if it's Google research, if it's reading reviews, if it's singing, if it's watching videos, if it's using AI to, like I heard someone say they use AI to, can you tell me about John chapter 3, but talk about like we're gossiping over tea, right? Like spilling the tea. And I thought that was awesome. Whatever you have to do to come into knowledge or come into this curious place of what ultimate love or ultimate reality can be, do it. Because it's worth it. And if we just think, oh, I already know God, it would be no different than me saying, well, I already know Marley, right? And Marley and God are very similar, right? But if I said, I already know Marley from our conversations having coffee, then I'm going to limit what I would ever know about Marley. I imagine there's a lot more to you than I know, right? When I have conversations with people about faith, this is where a lot of people live. Bible said it, I believe it, is a way of saying, I learned that, I moved on. It is a universal truth. How many of those universal truths have you had to reconstruct, let go, and reimagine what it could be? For me, so many. And I'm so thankful. I'm so thankful that I stayed in proximity and curiosity with what God be. So I'm going to wrap up. Everyone's favorite word. How can you come into knowledge of God? I'm going to give you a couple tips, right? And one I learned from my friend who was a pastor, now is a lawyer that works with immigration services. His name's Jeff. And I thank him for this all the time. I was at this conference, and he was talking about just like really dry spells in faith. And this was when I was in my 20s, where I was like, be still and know that I'm God, right? And he told a small room full of us 20-somethings, he goes, if there's one thing I can encourage you to do is come into contact and knowledge of what God is. And let me share with you an exercise. It's called 3-3-3. And you can adapt this. You can change it. You can make it 30-30-30. You can make it 1-1-1. You can, whatever you want. 3-3-3 is read three psalms out loud. And I've been saying this for 20 years. I've been saying this when your daughter was in youth group, right? 3:3:3. Read three psalms out loud in one sitting. And why out loud in one sitting? Because, at least for me, I think and experience things differently from when I say it out loud than when I think it in my head. Don't pause to, like, reflect. Just read it straight through. Then, take 3 minutes. If it's your phone or a clock or your internal clock, whatever you want to use, then take 3 minutes of just being silent. And sit, meditate, let your brain wander, and let those words, what you just said, ruminate. Then take three to however many minutes you want to pray. And to pray could be, I'd encourage you again, to say it out loud. And I'm a very internal processor. I keep things. I'm a verbal processor with people. When I'm thinking about God, I like to do it internally. I found it really helpful to say it out loud so I can hear it and discover what I'm thinking and feeling, or to journal it. And when I put all, I've done all those things separately. When I put all three of those things in the same, whatever, what, 15 minutes, it is a new discovery for me to think about what I read in the Psalms, what I meditate on, why am I focusing on that word, why am I focusing on that story. And then what I pray about or what I say out loud or what I journal isn't always directly connected, is an exercise to help come into relation to God or love or whatever word you choose to use in a different way. So 3:3:3. And then one that I love is, however you find joy, do it by being present with God being there. Which kind may sound mystic, but like the amount of times I walk through Jay Cook, I call it my secret trail. It's not a secret. There's like a sign that tells you this, but I always call it my secret trail. The amount of times I've walked through that and I've just started saying out loud what I feel like I'm having a conversation with God. I've done this by having conversation with people who have really hurt me because I don't want to ever talk to them again. Does anyone else do this? I have like conversations of like things, ooh, of things I've wanted to say to them. And sometimes they're really ugly and they're really dark, but I have to get that energy out there. I believe I'm doing that with God at my side. Because I don't want to live there. I don't want to live like this. And if whatever you do to move into this space of be still and know, loosen your grip, be open to know what God, this benevolent God, this good and beautiful God is doing. So I'm going to pray. And, oh, I'm not going to pray. I'm not going to pray. I already forgot. This is, I got a poem from Mary Oliver. And if you're not familiar with Mary Oliver, she's a powerhouse, man. She is so good. Her and Anne Lamott are some of my favorite. This is called A Summer Day. And when I'm done, I'm going to pray, and then we'll end up in service. If you ever want to process or talk, or you got questions, or you'd like to pray, or you'd like to confess, however, as a pastor, I can come alongside of the be still and know, I'd love to do that. But this is for you. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? The grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down in the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is your plan to do with your one wild and precious life? So God, we welcome you and we love you. And I thank you for the fields. I thank you for the grasshoppers. I thank you for the sun. I thank you for those times in my 20s where I felt like I had to be strong and so certain. I thank you for the times where I could learn through watching people practice vulnerability and sincerity and curiosity. I feel like it gave me permission to be soft and invited me into these wide open spaces of not knowing, and that was not a threat, that was not weakness, that was not evil. When people said it's a slippery slope, it felt like you were inviting me to new ways of existing and thinking. And those spaces were not, it was scary, but those spaces were so benevolent. And we only get one shot at this life. So God, will you help us to be still and to loosen our grip of what we think makes us worth being loved. We can loosen our grip of what we feel makes us feel like this is what it means to be a woman or a man. This is what it means to be beautiful or strong or successful. And as we loosen that grip, we can be open to maybe new expressions of what love and belonging and sacredness and beautiful can be. So God, will you give us wisdom of when to open up? Or maybe there's seasons where we do need to hold a grip on something. And thank you for the friends and the family around us that we can process and laugh and enjoy and learn and be encouraged and be challenged by. So help us move throughout the rest of this weekend, God, in the sun, on our secret trails, as we go and live this beautiful life. God, we can do it knowing that you are good. Maybe for a moment we can be still. Make we know again that you're a good and beautiful God. And we love you. Amen.